No, myself included.
Yeah. Bit of everything.
Yeah. And this research found, we'll go on to the different models that Beth identified, there's about five models that just kept popping up. But the conservative theology one's interesting. I was talking to Diocesan Secretary recently, and they said, we're very confused by this because our big conservative evangelical church is filled with young adults, and surely they'll all hate it. And I was like, why would they hate it? It's a very strong community, those conservative evangelical churches. I once went to one, and I didn't survive very long in it. women speaking, bit of a problem. But number one. But actually, they have a spirituality. They think and discuss and try and challenge. My question for them, and I haven't ever asked this, is that there is a kind of a faith development thing, that when you're in your late teens, early 20s, everything is very black and white, and you need it to be because that's your anchors for the rest of your life. When you hit 23, 24, and you can't get your dream job, and you realise actually you are the bottom of the scale, and actually you can't find anywhere to live, and you have no money, and suddenly mum and dad aren't there, and suddenly things start happening that you've been protected from, can those churches help you with that doubt, is my big question. And if it comes back saying, this is the black and white answer, and if you don't accept it, you haven't really got faith and you're not a proper Christian, then people will walk out. If those churches can say, okay, let's sit and think about this and let's work this through, then I think those churches will keep young adults. I don't, sadly, have the stats on the different styles of theology and which ones attract young adults more than others, because I've got conservative evangelical friends, women included, who love being in their churches, and people like me who couldn't exist there and prefer the slightly more open evangelical postmodern type. And again, it doesn't seem to matter about the theology. For young adults, these values just kept coming up, but they were expressed in different ways. So Beth identified five different types of churches. And hopefully you can try and remember which of those 12 fit into which and give stories from each one. So church planting hubs. The big example of this in the UK is Holy Trinity Brompton. Absolutely packed full of young adults, and they love it. And their big question is, how do we retain and attract more young adults? They have hundreds of small groups across London, and they've planted new churches in Bournemouth and Lincoln and various other places around the country. And the thing is, this question, this is what keeps them up at night thinking. And they're good churches. They do things in a way that we've done for lots of years, so they haven't really reinvented the wheel. They're kind of very good examples of church, of how we've done church and what works for people. So that's their number one. That's the first model that Beth found. The second one, youth church grown up. So this is kind of Soul Survivor. Began as a youth outreach in Watford and has grown up and obviously now has the festival. And there's a few other examples of this kind of church. So how do we grow up into adult church? How do we take the teen angst of 16-year-old girls when they're 23 and are looking at getting married and having kids? Like, it's different sets of questions for us as a church. So how do we do that? What are we moving into? So this was the second type of church she found. So they're not planting lots of other small ones, and they're not looking really at attracting lots and lots more people. But how do we grow up? What does it look like for us to be in our 20s and be doing this rather than our teens? The third group, deconstructed church. This tends to be people who, their big question is, what is church? They've often grown up in churches and found it doesn't quite work for them, and you just don't feel you could bring your friends to whatever it is that church is doing. But you realise that there's something, we've got to reinvent this in a way. This is probably why I feel most naturally at home. So what is church? Actually, what are the core components that we've had for 2,000 years? What does it mean to be a Christian in 21st century Oxford as a young adult is a question I'm forever putting to my community group. These are the kind of conversations we have. So we're not looking at how do we grow up from being a young person. We're young adults now. We're not looking at planting lots and lots and lots of others. We're saying, for us and our friends and our network, what does it mean to be church here in this place at this time in 2014? So that's our big question. Church on the margins was another one, and this would probably be where John might find himself fitting. So what is gospel transformation for the poor? What about those young adults who are third generation unemployed? They tend to get missed often when we talk about young adults, because we think young adults, they tend to be university educated and middle class. But actually, 50% of young adults don't go near a university. So it's only half the story. And what about those who actually don't have a lot of hope in life? And what does it mean to be a community of young adults in that place? And what does church look like for them? The fifth one was context-shaped church. So what is church in this context? So this tends to be with sort of subgroups who might be excluded from churches. So for example, goth churches, or spiritual seeker churches, or a particular ethnicity, or whatever kind of thing. There's one called the Order of the Black Sheep in Chesterfield, which sounds like a great pub. It's actually a church for I've forgotten the style it is. It's a goth church type thing, alternative. And what they do looks quite similar to Sunday morning, but it's with alternative people, including a lot of young adults. So there was a few of those as well. They didn't quite fit into any of the other categories with the questions they were asking. So putting them in a beautiful chart. So the five you can see down the left-hand side. The black line is usually the point where we call the ones below not church and the ones above church, typically. So church planting hubs and youth church grown up, HTB, Soul Survivor, we can look at it and go, it's church. None of us have a problem with that. And everyone celebrates what a wonderful thing it is that so many young adults are coming into those communities. And it is. It's great. Then we've got their questions. But if you look at who are they reaching, so the church planting hubs, so your HTB, they are reaching Christian people. And they're reaching the people who've left, who are kind of okay with going back. They are not reaching the ends of the earth. The same with the youth church grown up. So the guy who runs Soul Survivor, Andy Croft, actually said during his interview, we have no non-Christian people in our congregation. We haven't seen anyone converted from a completely non-Christian background in ages. But we're growing because we're growing with Christians who are leaving their other churches. And actually maybe a few are coming back who'd left. But we're not really having an impact on those who've never been. And Holy Trinity Brompton, they don't have quite as clear stories and stats and things like that. But actually the people who go to them are the people who know Jerusalem. They've got the map, they speak a bit of the language, and they know how to dress and they know how to behave. And often it will bring people back, which is a brilliant thing. But if about 85% of the UK's young adults have never gone to church before, then those top two are drawing on about 15 maybe to 20% of the young adults in the UK. And that's it. The other 80% is where our hearts lie. And that's what the other three models are starting to tap into. So the deconstructed church, they're closed D church, they're people who have left and they are not going back. And they're people who've never been. So my community group is slightly different. We've got people who've never been, people who've been and wavered, come and gone, and we've got people who've grown up in it and don't really want to go back to it every Sunday morning. And that's the mixture. And looking at the context of where these groups are reaching on the right-hand side, the top two, again, were reaching middle-class educated near student areas. Deconstructed, middle-class, highly educated, and very vulnerable people. It seems a random mix, but it is an exact description of the community group I'm part of and so many others as well. The church on the margins is reaching entirely non-church people. And these are not communities that have a community of 25 after 1 year paying their church tithe. These are communities, one of them that was surveyed, Beth spoke to the guy, I don't think he ended up on the final thing, because his community shut down one day because the entire church was sent to prison. And they'd become Christians since being arrested and then being the court date. And so they had this group of young Christians and the church just was decimated. Because that's the context they're working in. Now, to take someone on a journey of discipleship when you've come from that kind of background is not a quick process. And actually, some of these churches need probably 25 to 50 years before we really see anything that is approaching what we might want to call success. So they tend to be found in urban priority areas with high levels of poverty, mental health problems, addictions, homelessness, and criminal activity. Kind of the people that Jesus hung out with. in my view. The final one, the context-shaped church. This was church people, non-church. This might be people slightly on the fringe, so alternatives, goths, kind of spiritual seekers, those sorts of people. And they had people also excluded from church, like who didn't find church a comfortable place to be. And looking at the sizes, again, the top two sizes, the ones that we can all kind of see and celebrate, 100 plus. I mean, Soul Survivor in a summer, I think, is about 20,000 plus. But the other ones are all very small, 20 to 40, 12 to 30, but with a wider network. Young adults are far more networked, I think, than previous, with Facebook and Twitter and just moving around so much. You can end up with friends in about 70 countries and 70 towns in the UK, and that's sort of normal. Looking further at these, Beth looked at what they did with sacraments. So the top two, again, they look very much like what we experience in Jerusalem. We know vicars administer sacraments, and there's a liturgy, and that's how it goes. Deconstructed church wouldn't have any vicars around because they've left, and they don't want to go back. So if they do sacraments, it will be around a table. It will be part of a meal. Church on the margins, if they do it at all, if you get to sacraments, it's quite a long way down a journey, again, would be table, around a table. The context-shaped church, interestingly, were kind of creating church expressions that look quite similar and were done in similar ways with similar authority and like licensing guidelines, but were just done with a different sort of subsection of people. You can see the practices again, and this is where it gets, I think, quite interesting. And actually, what do we mean by church? Again, the top two, we recognise it. It fits with what we've done. Deconstructed, we meet around a meal or around a project or around a task. An event on a Sunday morning doesn't really work. Why would church only be for an hour and a half a week? Why isn't it 24/7? It's more the question that goes on certainly in our group. And so the practices just start to look different across these different groups. Now, why is it that numbers 3, 4, and 5 are not instantly recognised as church? Within Fresh Expressions, nobody bats an eyelid about this. If this is what it takes to reach young adults and this is their context, then this is what it needs to look like. We adopt it, we go for it. But if I was to try and talk to my bishop about how my community group, which doesn't have anybody licensed or ordained or trained within it, and we're dealing with pastoral issues that when I did explain them to the vicar we linked to, he was left with a rather open mouth because they were things that he didn't touch in the congregation just because of what was going on with the lives of our people. But we don't have anyone trained to do it. We don't have specific resources. We're just doing it kind of ourselves. So you can see the different practices, but actually none of them are outside the remit of what the church has done for 2,000 years. Actually, there's nothing in a way that's new, but it might feel a bit new for where we are in our space and time. And buildings again, three of those groups are quite happy using churches. Number 3 and number 4 tended to be more homes, public spaces. Sometimes you'd use a church, but actually churches aren't always the comfortable place to go, so you wouldn't use it. The challenge with using homes that I think all the groups identified with is that when you're in your 20s, if you own a home or you rent a home, it doesn't tend to have a living room and a space big enough for 25 people to eat in. If you could get 25 people in the house, that would be impressive. So actually, spaces to meet become a really key issue. Some dioceses have mixed it up a bit, and they found old vicarages that tended to be big and space for community meetings, actually give them to a few young adults who want to pioneer a community and let them fill the house with young adults who meet around a table for dinner once a week and discuss life and run some community projects from it and have a community house. You can even charge the young adults rent. They won't mind. This was actually giving real life to young adult groups because they suddenly had resources available to fit with what they were trying to do. So the wider issues was around things like leadership, isn't it always? What about people who aren't trained, aren't authorised? If you've got someone who's a pioneer ordinand and they move on after 3 years, what happens to the community? But if you don't have someone recognised, how does the community access resources and accountability and wider wisdom from the church family? the ecclesial tradition had no impact on the success of those different models. It didn't matter if you're conservative, liberal, Baptist, Methodist, Anglican, Quaker, etc., etc. This held true across the spectrum. The big issue that I think is going to become very big issue in the next few years is how do we connect to the wider church? If people pioneer things to the edges and to the ends of the earth, how do you connect with what the majority of the church is in Jerusalem? How do we make those connections? How do we do unity in the middle of diversity and without expecting people at the ends of the earth to learn our language? One vicar said to me recently, but if people go and pioneer at the ends of the earth, how are we going to integrate the ends of the earth to Jerusalem? And I said, how is Jerusalem going to integrate with the ends of the earth? And he was like, oh, hadn't thought of that. So it's a two-way discussion. And actually, how do we create those conversations in a way that is respectful and not controlling and responds to the Holy Spirit's leading, I think is going to be crucial for the next 20 years. And size and sustainability, with constant change in and out, some groups can exist for 1 week and collapse the next just because of how young adults' lives go. And some of the big ones look more sustainable, but actually are they reaching the far ends of the earth? But some of the smaller ones are very fragile. My dream, I don't know if you've read Church for Every Context by Mike Moyner, it's a very big book. Anyway, in there he says that in the Jewish tradition, they began with tents in the wilderness. Then they moved on to some synagogues, and finally they built a temple. And he says, you don't start with temples and big structures and big buildings. You start with small things, of which a lot of tents, if you've ever been camping, especially a soul survivor, a lot of them fall down. They're sometimes badly constructed, but some survive, and some go on to become bigger buildings. And actually, maybe we need an awful lot of young adult tents for a while, and eventually things will emerge. The challenge comes that often young adults are asked, where's your 25 members of the congregation? Where's your vicar? Why haven't you... And ask the questions that you should be applying to churches that have existed for 1,000 years, not ones that have existed for 1,000 days, if that. So sometimes it's just understanding a bit more actually what's really going on and asking appropriate questions that I think will be part of the answer. And the final thing, just a life stage. People wish it was, but it isn't. this isn't something that we're all going to hit 40 and suddenly go, do you know what? I just have a craving to go to an Anglican liturgy. It's just struck me. it's just not going to happen. All the research shows it. This is here to stay. And my dream is that when I retire and get to 60, well, it's about 75 by the time I get to retire, that actually there'll be a vibrant church that looks different in different contexts but is for all ages. So that's what we pray and work towards. John is now going to stop me talking and to give you a chance to talk, because there is that was a lot of information to throw at you.
If I get the mic to work. Is this on again? Yes, yeah. Good. Thank you, Penny. I think it would be good to first reflect on our own experiences. So experiences of church in your area, deanery, parish, that are above the line, and then those that are below the line. So those that are maybe a little bit like Soul Survivor, but not quite as big in your area. And then what those ones that are a little bit more like the candles on the beach that we were hearing about earlier. What your experience is, how do they work, what do they look like in your area? Let's make this a little bit more concrete in our own experience. And then it would be interesting to explore some of those. Can you give me the next slide?
That one?
No, the next one.
That one?
This one here, some of these wider issues. It would be interesting to know ways which this has already worked itself out in your areas, if it has, or potential pitfalls you've come across, or potential solutions that you've found, or you might be able to come up with some solutions if you've not got any tangible things. So let's start with, we'll put up the first slide for 5 minutes, and then we'll move to the slide to the other one in case you haven't got enough notes, so you've got them, and we'll take 10 minutes just to have a conversation on your table, and then we'll feedback like we did last time. Sorry, I had my back to you. Let's go.
Can I'm back on again.
can I draw your conversations to a close? Thank you very much for reflecting on that. We would love to hear what you've got to say, but we're very aware that it's 20 minutes until I think we're probably going to go and have some tea. So we would like to move on and talk to you about some of the recommendations out of the report, talk about some of our stories, and then invite you to come and join us again later on this evening if you want to come and share some of these ideas, some of these creative responses, so we can maybe put some of this stuff back together again. So, Penny, are you going to take us with recommendations?
Yes.
Good.
So these were the recommendations at the back of the report, and the report is available for £3.50 at the back of the hall. sorry, it's that price, Fresh Expressions price, and there's nothing we can do about it. Beth's recommendations, after doing all of this research and talking to so many all these different people, she said number one is recognise the different types. If a young adult has started some sort of community that's based around following Jesus in their context, recognise that for them that might be church. And actually, once you recognise it, it gives them permission. I've got a bit of a thing of thinking that actually young adults think we're waiting to be given permission to go and reach our friends because we think we need somebody to tell us it's okay. So tell people it's okay and that you're excited to see what they'll get up to. Number two was access to community homes. So as I mentioned about the vicarages, and actually space to meet is a really, really big issue for a lot of places. Acknowledge small sacramental communities. So those who are doing some form of sacrament, be it an agape-style communion, actually work out a way that can be okay, even when in canon law it probably isn't. But actually, I know. Tug said I could open a can of worms and rock the boat, so there you go, you've just had it. Actually, there is a massive conversation around sacraments, especially in the Church of England. The Methodists and Baptists, I think, have it slightly easier conversation around this. But actually, what do we mean by leadership within church communities? Where does ordination stop and lay people start? All of this is a massive conversation that is needed. Which leads into number four, supportive connections to the wider church. We have so many stories of sort of 23-year-olds who are leading groups of 20 to 30 with no training. Actually, that is really exciting, but potentially could also be quite traumatic for a lot of people involved. Actually, they don't need someone to take it over. They need a mentor. So how do we create these bridges into what people are doing? And as we encourage people to start stuff, how do we help them grow as leaders and help their communities flourish in good ways? And it might not be that they end up coming along on a Sunday morning, but there's an awful lot of wisdom within the church about how you pastor people well. How do we create those kind of connections? Valuing the vocational role of church planting hubs. So these are your big HTB soul survivors, your churches that are doing it really well. All three of us have come from that section of the church. I was discipled in an Anglican church in a village. I learned to love Jesus there. I was given opportunities there. It now doesn't work for me, but I come with a phenomenal heritage of 2,000 years of what the church in the UK has achieved. That equips me, hopefully, to reach out to the ends of the earth. So there is a lot more people like us in those big churches. So they aren't, oh, look, you're only going to reach 20% of young adults. We should forget about you. That is a massive resource of potential leaders. Provision for youth churches growing up, as young adults will probably less and less leave home to go to university because of university fees and let alone accommodation costs. Increasingly, young adults are staying in their parents' home and going to the local university. And I think that's a trend that is probably set to continue. So their youth groups won't get to 18 and all leave. And equally, they won't get to all 18 and easily transition into a Sunday morning service. So what do we do with them? Actually, is this a new young adult church that needs to be set free to do something slightly different? And actually, our diocese putting resources into supporting this? And kind of where's the church putting its what it's got? So we have diocesan posts for young people, for messy church, for children's workers, etc. How about some for young adults? And actually, instead of employing one person to start one young adult church, employ one diocesan person to encourage somebody, 20 people, to start their own things, and then help support them in that. So that was the recommendations from Beth. The next thing we were going to do was, what's your reactions? But we've kind of done that, and we hope to you'll join us in the bar and tell us what you think of all of this. But we are going to share some stories. Steve hasn't said anything for... No, John's going to start.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Someone's going to start.
Okay. I'll go here.
You can go there. Yeah,
thank you. So, I'm currently in Winchester, which is a lovely place to be, but not quite as lovely as where I was for the 10 years prior in Bournemouth. And I went there as a student, and... having grown up in a church, and my dad as a vicar, I was pretty happy with Jesus and church and the idea of all that, but kind of really asking that question of what is church? Why do we do it like this? Why does it have to be this way? And what is this chasm of divide I see between the real world where my friends enjoy themselves and live and spend their time and that thing that happens in that building sometimes? And it was a twofold desire, really, to bridge this chasm. On the one hand, there's a missional thing about reaching my friends in their real world with some sort of good news and Jesus and all of what it can be to be part of a worshiping community. But on the other hand, it was just as much about how can church be better? How can it be more like this? How can it be more culturally relevant? How can we have the? How come they get all the fun music? How come they get all the good stuff? And why do we get stuck with this? So in Bournemouth, among other things, oh, there should have been some slides. I'm sorry, there's not, but I can show you some photos at some other point. We began something. We began. There was a nightclub chaplaincy we had in Bournemouth, and so a whole ministry grew, looking at what would it look like to be a Christian presence as part of the nightclubbing community of Bournemouth. There's about 75,000 people out and about in the hundreds or so bars and clubs in Bournemouth on any given weekend, and yet no Christian presence at all, no churches are open, and then on a Sunday morning there's 27 churches open and not many people, certainly none of those people. So what would it look like to be part of that world and yet a Christian presence there? And we did all sorts of things, from walking the streets in the similar-ish way to what is now street pastors. This began way before that was around, but we were doing that sort of thing. We were just going out regularly and hanging out, but being Christians, being church in and amongst those places. We had prayer rooms and sacred spaces in some of the nightclubs. We would do DJ-led worship events in the nightclubs and in some of the bars. We did all manner of creative things, some more successful than others. Some experiments were pretty disastrous, but it was great fun. It was a real way to grow. And from five or six of us beginning, there's now a church of 60 or so people in Bournemouth from that world, from who just would never have rocked up on a Sunday morning, but who did find that by hanging out with us and doing it in these more alternative and creative ways, there was some truth to it, there was something of the spirit to it, and they were excited by that. So it's something that's it's been a real privilege to work with. One particular story that was perhaps the most exciting was an event we used to do quarterly or so, not too often, because I think some of this stuff can lose its magic if we do it weekly. I don't know if that is a lesson for us all on any other levels. But we would open up what would be the cathedral if Bournemouth were a city, St. Peter's, I don't know if you know, is right slap bang in the centre of town. Right amidst lots of the bars and clubs, actually. And we opened it up about 11 at night through till 3, 4 in the morning. And just filled it with poetry and projections and art and fairy lights and very chilled out music, but which we had very quiet inside and then very loud playing out.